And we've really taken it upon ourselves to feel like we have to have this ideal relationship with our children, or we're going to screw them up for life.
You're listening to the Mindful Mama Podcast, episode number 368. Today we are talking about how you are not a shitty parent with Carla Naumburg. Welcome to the Mindful Mama Podcast. Here it's about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. At Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have, and when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm your host, Hunter Clark Fields. I help smart, thoughtful parents stay calm so they can have strong, connected relationships with their children. I've been practicing mindfulness for over 20 years. I'm the creator of Mindful Parenting, and I'm the author of the best-selling book, Raising Good Humans, a mindful guide to breaking the cycle of reactive parenting and raising kind, confident kids. Hello, dear listener. Hey, if you haven't done it yet, please hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you get something from the Mindful Mama Podcast, all please do me a favor. Go over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review. It just helps the podcast grow more. It takes like 30 seconds and it just makes all the difference in the world. You are in for such a treat because today we are talking to my dear friend, Carla Naumburg, who is a PhD and LICSW, a clinical social worker and a mother. She's the author of 5 nonfiction books, including the international bestseller, How to Stop Losing Your Shit with Your Kids. We're saying the words today, folks, as well as her new book, You Are Not a Shitty Parent, and the forthcoming How to Stop Freaking Out, the completely swear-free middle grade adaptation of How to Stop Losing Your Shit with Your Kids. So if you have ever thought that you are a shitty parent, you are not alone. We're going to talk about how a combination of factors has led to this generation, us folks, being incredibly hard on ourselves. And Carla is an incredible author. She and I have also led workshops together in the past. And she's a great speaker. You're going to love this episode. I want you to listen for some takeaways, how we are wired for comparison, how all of us, literally every single one of us, makes bad parenting decisions sometimes, and how we need to ask, what do I need? Really, really important questions. Now, if you are feeling like a shitty parent because you have been yelling and reactive, especially lately, I have resources for you. I am giving away my top 2 best tools to stop yelling, as well as the Mindful Parenting Roadmap for free. And you can pause this episode and get it right now at mindfulmamamentor.com/stopyelling. So that's mindfulmamamentor.com/stopyelling. Just sign up. You can get my top 2 best mind-body tools to stop yelling right away. All right, let's do this, folks. Join me at the table as I talk to Carla Naumburg.
Do you want to stop yelling and have your child listen too? Well, I have exciting news for you. If you're hearing this right now, it means that the doors to mindful parenting are open. At mindfulparentingcourse.com. This only happens for a limited time, and it may be perfect for you if you want to be that patient, calm parent, but you're afraid of being walked all over. You're losing it and you want to be that steady, peaceful parent. You don't have a cohesive method and you take in bad advice like just count to 1, 2, 3. Mindful parenting is an evidence-based system that not only teaches you how to calm your reactivity, but offers you a ton of personal guidance. A lot of other parenting coaches talk about the best way to respond to your child, but guess what? They don't walk you through the research-proven practices that it really takes to create changes that actually last. Mindful parenting teaches you the specific steps to create cooperative, loving relationships for life. In mindful parenting, you can learn how to stay calm, even if you find yourself shouting hourly now. Be present for your child, no matter what they're going through. Resolve conflicts easily without yelling or taking away the iPad. Set limits without your child resenting you for days afterward. And build trust between you and your child so that you avoid misery in the teen years. The doors are open now at mindfulparentingcourse.com. Unlike other programs in mindful parenting, we offer one-on-one coaching to every member and weekly drop-in coaching sessions. Don't wait anymore. You and your kids are worth leveling up. Go to mindfulparentingcourse.com and join now before the doors close again. That's mindfulparentingcourse.com. I'll see you there.
You wrote a new book that we're going to say the title. We're just going to say it.
Well, I mean, your regular guests, I haven't been on a little while because, you know, COVID and life, but your regular guests should know that I'm a little bit of a potty mouth. So I think we should just say it. Are you going to say it or am I going to say it?
I think you say the title.
Okay, because I'm the potty mouth. Yeah. The book is called You Are Not a Shitty Parent, How to Practice Self-Compassion and Give Yourself a Break. And it's going to be published on September 27th, 2022.
Woot, woot. Woot. So we're so excited to have that come out.
I want like background noise. I want canned laughter. Yeah. I want clapping. I want little fireworks. Can you do that, Hunter?
Yeah.
Are you fancy?
Can you hear it?
Wait, you just did that. I don't know if your listeners can hear that, but like she's magical.
I think it's on. I did clapping. We're in a new kind of studio that I can do it. I can have a laugh track as well, apparently. Wow, that's cool. I'm glad you heard it. That was my first test ever of my studio noises, dear listener.
If I had access to a laugh track, I would laugh track myself all the time and it would be out of control. So I'm really glad I don't have that technology. Did you just laugh track me? Couldn't hear it, but I believe. See, she's actually laughing, so I don't need the laugh track people because Hunter is actually laughing. So I got like the real laughter.
Okay. All right. I'm going to stop with the media. I'm going to hide that away so I can't do it anymore. But Carla, I'm so excited to talk to you. And, you know, we talk about compassion a lot of different ways here because I think it's so important. But I think that what I'd like to kind of dive in with you with is this idea of why do we feel so much pressure, parenting pressure? Why do we feel like we're shitty parents? What is going on that is just like pulling us deep into this pit?
Oh, Hunter, I am so happy you asked that question because this is one of my favorite things to talk about. So for this book, I made up a diagnosis. This is not a syndrome. Like a syndrome that I made up. So it's not real, but it's my book, so I can put whatever I want in it. So I called it shitty parent syndrome, which is a thing that I think many, many parents of our generation struggle with. And so let's talk about how did we get to this place where so many of us are suffering and living with shitty parent syndrome. Oh, I should explain what it is, first of all.
Yes.
It's the thought, belief, or perception that you are a shitty parent when in fact you are not. And this is the point at which you or your listeners might be thinking to yourselves, but Carla, what if I actually am a shitty parent? Then am I suffering from shitty parent syndrome? And what I would say is you're not. You are not a terrible parent. And I don't even know you. And I feel really comfortable saying that. I'll tell you why. Mm. First of all, every parent makes terrible parenting choices. Every parent behaves in ways that aren't our best selves. Every parent interacts with our kids in ways that we feel guilty about later, that are less than ideal or whatever it is. And that doesn't make us terrible parents. That's just part of the deal. That's the package. That's the reality. That's like saying, I don't know, blaming yourself because gravity exists or something, right? Mm. So we all screw up. Now, some of you might be saying, okay, fine. Maybe I can make mistakes and still be a good parent. But what about those parents that we've all heard of or we all know who are like legitimately awful parents? Somebody out there is thinking this right now. Mm-hmm. The ones who have an addiction or there's some kind of abuse going on or neglect. And what I would say is, yeah, those are terrible parenting choices. But calling anyone a shitty parent, how does that help? That doesn't do anything. That's just a label that leaves someone feeling terrible, that leaves them feeling stuck. And there's no off-ramp from that. There's no clarity or path to healing or growth. There's nothing. It's just, okay, well, you suck and good luck with that, buddy. So what I prefer to think is that every single parent needs and can benefit from information, support, and resources we don't have, right? And some of us really need a lot more information, support, and resources. And so if you are a parent who's really struggling and judging yourself, we can talk about this later, but let's try to flip that narrative. You're not a terrible parent. You're just a parent who needs more support and information and resources than you have right now.
Yeah. I mean, because I kind of what I'm hearing you say is like that we, you know, if there's that, even if you're struggling massively, like like with addiction or incredible lack of resources or something like that, you're that labeling, you know, that labeling of yourself as a terrible parent, as I'm no good, I'm useless, all of that, that's just pulling us deeper down into a rabbit hole. That's this like layer of judgment and recrimination that is just not even in any way helpful.
Yeah, it just makes things worse. So let's not do that to ourselves or to each other, right? Go ahead.
No. I mean, yeah. I mean, I like this idea that, you know, we may be a parent who's struggling, but regardless of how much we're struggling, it's really a matter of, do I need more information? Do I need more support? Do I need more resources? And I think that's so, I love this way of looking at it, because I think this is so important, because we live in a world where we don't get, I mean, we may be like overrun with information in some ways, but as far as support and resources, some of us don't have the information, and a lot of us don't have support, and there are a lot of us that don't have resources either. You know, the Homo sapiens evolved to live in hunter-gatherer tribes of small tribes, right, where everyone knew each other and we were supporting each other. And now we live in, you know, we're in this nuclear family where we don't have a tribe of people around us supporting us, and like even human beings wouldn't have even evolved to have like this extended period of care that human babies need if there wasn't this support. Like we biologically, neurologically evolved to have so much support, and now we don't have that. And I think that is so important to look at these pieces, that support and resources piece.
It's hugely important. And, you know, as you mentioned, the support piece just got worse during COVID, because we were all stuck inside our houses and unsure of when we could leave and who we could spend time with. And, you know, while there were some silver linings in terms of certain communities being accessible online that weren't before, online's never as good as in person. It's just not. And also, when I'm talking about resources, I'm not just talking about external resources like money or health insurance or healthcare or family or educational systems. I'm also talking about internal resources, right? We all come to parenting with different levels of energy, of mental health and mental illness and mental wellness, of an understanding of kids and how they work, the ability to stay patient with them. We all come with these varying levels of internal resources. And I have a friend, she has four kids, and I've never seen her lose her temper with her children. And she's got this like internal stability and patience and calmness that's just inherent to who she is that I don't understand at all, Hunter. It's like so not who I am, right? Like I'm like one giant button just waiting to be pushed. And she doesn't seem to have any kid-sized buttons at all. And she's amazing. So we all have these varying levels, right, of these external and internal resources. And there's so many factors that go into that. It's genetics. It's how we were raised. It's, you know, the fit between ourselves and our children. And some kids are a better fit for their parents than other kids. And there's just a million factors that go into that. And so that's why I really don't think of anyone as a shitty parent. It's just, I don't think that way at all, except when I used to think that way about myself.
Okay, so let's go there to where you thought that way about yourself. You had a couple of resources, I know, because maybe you didn't have that like calm resource being just like me. I can kind of relate to that temper. But you live a comfortable life, you know, you have a parenting partner, you know, you live in a comfortable Western city, you know, in New England, all the, you know, you had some resources, but yet you were calling yourself a shitty parent. So what, can you take us back to that place and what was happening for you then? Stay tuned for more Mindful Mama podcast right after this break. We are supported by KiwiCo. I love watching my daughters do their KiwiCo crates. They loved their Kiwi crates. They get so excited every month when the box would come. I remember Sora making the giant hand claw and just being so psyched about like grabbing things with the claw, and she did it all by herself. I love KiwiCo so much because what we learn at a young age sticks with us through adulthood. And that's why fostering a love of learning for our children is so important. So why not make it fun? Kids are primed to learn by having fun. They learn the most by having fun. And that's one of the things I love about KiwiCo. KiwiCo is defining the future of play by making it engaging, enriching, and seriously entertaining. And they learn so much. So what is it? Your child can get super cool hands-on science, art, and geography projects delivered to their door every month. Like my kids, they'll be so excited to see them in the mail. And you'll be surprised at how high quality the materials are, too. These are real engineering, science, and art projects. You cultivate your child's natural creativity. They'll explore new worlds without even leaving home, right? They can discover the science of magic to engineering, a domino machine, all kinds of things. And they get this incredible moment of pride and accomplishment at the end of a KiwiCo project that just sparks this confidence for ongoing tinkering and experimentation. So do your part to encourage your children to be innovators and creative thinkers. You won't believe what they can build and accomplish with KiwiCo. Spark that love of learning today with a KiwiCo subscription. Get 50% off your first month plus free shipping on any crate line with the code HUNTER at KiwiCo.com. That's 50% off your first month. It's a great deal. 50% off your first month at KiwiCo.com, promo code HUNTER.
Yeah. So let's microscope out a little bit, because I realized you asked a really important question, Hunter, at the top of this that we didn't get to, that is directly related to what we're talking about right now, which is, why do we parents think about ourselves as shitty parents? Why are we all suffering from this syndrome that I totally made up? So I think there's a few reasons. One is we're wired to do this. Like you talked about way back when we lived in small villages. Well, let's go back even farther to the development of sort of the human brain. And, you know, the number one purpose of our brain is to keep us alive. It's not to think clearly. It's not to make good life choices. It is to keep us alive, right? And so this part of our brain developed to be constantly on the lookout for threats and problems and to remember them and anticipate them so we can stay alive. So the human brain that saw the squiggly thing on the ground and decided it was a snake and jumped back was more likely to continue to stay alive, not get killed by the snake, and pass along their uptight, judgmental, super freaked out temperament, right? Their genetic material, than those parents who looked at this squiggly thing on the ground were like, oh, that's a stick. I'm totally going to pick it up. And then they got bit by a snake and then they died. Mm-hmm. So we're sort of wired to look out for the bad stuff that happens in life. And the problem is that part of our brain is pretty simple. It's not super discriminating. And so it's ready to judge everything, even when the things it's judging have nothing to do with whether or not we're going to survive a situation. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of wired to judge ourselves, right? To look out for the negative. It's just how the brain works. The other thing is that we're wired for comparison, because as you pointed out, Hunter, for so long and still now, we need community. But way back when, we really needed our little village cave people, happy family to keep us alive. And one of the best ways to stay connected to your community is to constantly be gauging what other people are doing and make sure you're fitting in a good place. Because if you're doing too much or you're doing too little, what if you get kicked out of the tribe? Right? Mm-hmm. So it's really a safety mechanism. But it used to be that we would compare ourselves, to members of our community who, generally speaking, lived near us and had access to similar resources and ideas and traditions as we did. And I don't want to glamorize or glorify the good old days when, you know, it was all about keeping up with the Joneses who lived next door to you. But there is something to be said about having a more constricted range of comparison, because what's happening now is that we're comparing ourselves to celebrities and uber wealthy people who we see online, and they have unlimited resources and a whole different like world, right? Or we're comparing ourselves to parents in completely different cultures. French parents do it better. Asian parents do it better. Indigenous parents do it better. And well, maybe, but they're also living in a totally different world. So mm-hmm. I think that leaves us feeling worse about parenting. Social media, of course, like we could go on all day about the impact of social media and reality television on our own view of ourselves. And it's so easy to forget. I forget this all the time, that we're comparing our worst moments, our internal experience, to their best moments, their highly curated experience. And if you go by social media, you know, everybody had amazing summer vacations and no kids ever lost their shit or threw up or, you know, peed on the train or like, I just look at these pictures and I have to remind myself that nobody had a perfect summer vacation, right? And yet it's hard. It's hard to remember that. And then there's one more reason why I think we're all suffering from shitty parent syndrome. So I would argue that we are the first generation of parents who has been told that it is incumbent upon us to have a super healthy, solid, flexible, warm, forgiving, all the things perfect relationship with our children. And I'm not saying that previous parents didn't care about their relationship with their children. What I am saying is that for the first time, it has gotten into the popular parenting vernacular that our attachment to our children, and I'm not talking about attachment parenting here, that's something different. I'm just saying that the nature of our relationship with our children is a determinant of the future relationships they will have, right? Mm. So this is a thing that we parents are being told really for the first time, I would argue, in the history of humanity. In the past, it was like, oh, keep your kid alive so they can, you know, run the blacksmith shop or become a nurse or a doctor like you were. But really, it was kind of a financial investment. And as Jennifer Senior, the author of All Fun and No Joy, one of my favorite sort of books about parenting, says, now it's really an emotional investment. And we've really taken it upon ourselves to feel like we have to have this ideal relationship with our children or we're going to screw them up for life. And oh my gosh, Hunter, that's first of all, not true. But second of all, completely overwhelming. All of a sudden you have this creature living in your house that you didn't necessarily pick. I mean, even if you chose to have babies, right? Like I chose my husband because I like his temperament. We get along well and he's funny and he makes me laugh and he generally doesn't annoy the crap out of me. And fortunately, that's mostly true with my kids. But what if you got a kid who's not like that? What if you got a kid whose temperament is really hard for you, right? Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to have this perfect relationship with them? Oof. So all these things kind of conspire, I think, to leave us feeling like really crappy parents. Now, I had all that going on for me when I was a newer parent. But the one factor that I also had going on that I didn't realize at the time was I had a whopping case of postpartum anxiety. Mm. And I'm a clinical social worker, and I went years before I realized that was what was going on for me. And one of the things many parents don't realize, many people don't realize, is that irritability is a symptom of anxiety. We usually think that anxiety is just about worry or fear. And irritability can be a huge symptom. And for me, it definitely was. And so I was incredibly irritable with my kids. I was losing it with them all the time. And it's not hard to make the leap from losing your temper with your kids a lot to thinking you're a bad parent, right?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. That's my little soapbox stance about why we're all suffering from crappy parent syndrome.
It's fascinating because, like, in a way, you know, that's like psychology, right, is a new science and it's, you know, I remember going to college and finally taking my first psychology class and then learning about attachment and being like, oh my gosh, you know, it's all my parents. It's because mom went away when I was 6 weeks old.
Oh, we love the parent. We love the mom shaming. It's all about the mom shaming. That drives me banana pants.
I know. We are a generation of people who are looking at our own psychology. We're looking at the differences in the way we relate to other people, and then we're relating back to our upbringing. And that is putting this pressure. I mean, I imagine for you, even as a social worker, you felt like you had more pressure on yourself. I mean, like there are people who come into mindful parenting who are like kindergarten teachers or social workers or, you know, child development experts. And they're like, I should know this. I should be able to keep my temper. I should be, you know, this, all this like shooting all over themselves because of your, you know, what you should know. And that's like your nervous system doesn't care what you already know in some ways.
Your nervous system does not care. It really does not care. It's also, yes, Hunter, it is an incredibly humbling experience to have just finished a doctorate in clinical social work and sit down at your computer and literally type into Google, how do I stop yelling at my kids, right? That was a rough moment. And parent, you think, you know, lots of us, myself included, think that if we had younger siblings or hung out with our cousins or did a lot of babysitting that we're ready for our own kids. And just because you know how to change a diaper doesn't mean you are ready for the massive internal shift that happens in our bodies and our minds and our psychology and our emotional state and all the things. And if you happen to be the birth parent, if you happen to be the one who gave birth to the baby too, then it just, like, you know, whatever, destroys your body, but that's a different story. I mean, to all you expecting parents, it's a beautiful experience out there, and it is the, you
They're
know,
not
natural
listening.
Cycle. Good. Don't listen to me, parents. If you haven't had your baby yet, do not listen to me talk.
We'll put that in the warning in the beginning along with the expletive. Do not listen if you have not already had kids.
Oh God. But yeah, it's just, it's hard when you have your own kids. It's a whole different level of internal pressure, unrealistic expectations, for many of us, overwhelming anxiety. And if you are a parent who did not suffer from anxiety, then God bless you. That's amazing. Stick with that plan. That's a better plan. Not anxiety is actually a better plan than anxiety. That's my deep thought for the day, Hunter.
That's interesting, though, because I had so much irritability, and I definitely... I'm sure I felt anxious. I probably could have had postpartum anxiety that was never diagnosed as well. I mean, I don't know. But anyway, I'm right there with you with the irritability and the frustration and the fear of, oh my God, this small human being, and I'm going to mess up this human being.
They're terrifying, those little things. I remember being in the hospital just scared out of my mind, and the nurse is like, oh, it's fine. And she's like throwing the baby around. And I'm like, what the hell is happening here? How are you not breaking that thing? And they're hardy little creatures, though.
I feel like the first baby, like, it's the whole thing. Like, you read all this stuff about, like, how the first 3 years is like this incredibly important years for imprinting and the brain and all this stuff. And then you're just like, oh my God. And you have no idea because no one takes classes, and you've never done this before. You're totally in shock. And then those second babies, they have to contend with an older sibling, but man, I feel like they've got it the better road as far as it goes with their parents most of the time.
But so this is, Hunter, this is actually a perfect transition to the thing I would like to discuss with you today, which is self-compassion. And you know, whether it's the first baby who you feel like, you know, you totally screwed up with, or the second baby who, you know, you feel like isn't getting enough attention, or whatever it is, you are going to be an imperfect parent. I am an imperfect parent. We're all imperfect parents. And sometimes we can do a little better, and often we just need to have so much compassion for ourselves. So, so much, especially when we're living through the nightmare of a global pandemic or whatever it is. We just have to hold ourselves and treat ourselves with grace and kindness and acceptance and all the things. And man, that is so easy to say and so stinking hard to do.
Stay tuned for more Mindful Mama podcast right after this break. We are supported by Thrive Cosmetics, high-performance beauty and skincare products made with clean, skin-loving ingredients with no parabens, sulfates, phthalates, 100% vegan and cruelty-free. And the name Cause is in the name for a reason, because every purchase supports organizations that help women and communities thrive. Listen, I love Thrive Cosmetics. I use... Their products are so good. I use the Brilliant Eye Brightener almost every single day. So I have the Aurora Rose Gold color. It looks so good on every kind of skin. Put it right over like the lids, right under the lids, right in the corner of the eye. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's like you've had this awakening and you just look bright and awake and healthy. I love it so, so much. And I'm obsessed. I use literally daily the Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara. It's this incredible best-selling product, has more than 20,000 five-star reviews, and it just really kind of mimics the look of lash extensions with no like glue or anything like that, right? And it has super easy to remove. This tubing formula just slides right off with warm water and a washcloth. You don't even need soap. And they have incredible skincare products. They have this Define Gravity Eye Lifting Cream that instantly lifts, tightens, and brightens the skin around your eyes with Line Smoothing Hydration, which I have now obsessed about. It just fights signs of stress and aging and dullness. It's like beauty sleep in a bottle. I love Thrive Cosmetics because the products are amazing, but the Bigger Than Beauty mission just really resonates with me. It, you know, for every product purchase, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. And they have over 300 giving partners across the country. They support a whole bunch of different causes. Now is a great time to try Thrive Cosmetics for yourself. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order when you visit thrivecosmetics.com/hunter. And I'm not just saying it in a Boston accent. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/hunter for 15% off your first order. It's not something that was modeled for us a lot. I mean, I feel like, at least in my family, like there's a lot of like kind of, there's some hard assness, you know, mom, I love you.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Hunter's mom. We love you.
My mom was actually like, well, you know, actually when I was sick, my dad was the most compassionate one. He was very, very compassionate when he was sick because poor mom was a nurse. And so she was just like compassion fatigue by the time it got to my, you know, whiny little 7-year-old tummy ache or whatever it was, you know. But I think that it's not something that was passed down through generations. Like there was certainly very little compassion shown to, you know, as far as I know, to, you know, to my father, as far as the way, from what the stories I've heard of how, you know, he was parented, there was a lot of, if you do X behavior, you will get yelled at or you will get hit, right? In past generations. So, and I don't think that, and we live in a very judgmental culture too. You know, we're very hard on ourselves. I think that it's not something that's comes naturally, at least to people in the U.S., is like compassion for ourselves.
This is so not a Western thing. And no, for sure. I didn't grow up with this, and my parents didn't grow up with it, and their parents didn't grow up with it. So mm-hmm. This is not about generational shaming. I tend to think of compassion like a language. And if you didn't grow up with people speaking it to you, you're not going to know how to speak it, right? And my parents didn't know about it. And really, it's not until a few years ago that it was part of kind of common lingo, or at least common lingo amongst us social work parenting nerds. But, yeah. You know, Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer and Susan Pollock and you and other parenting people and psychologists and clinicians and researchers are now talking about this. And it's huge. It's been a game changer for me. But again, it's definitely not a language I grew up thinking. And after spending 4 decades judging the crap out of myself, my little judgment neurons are like firing on all cylinders. Like that's my native language. That's what I default to when I'm stressed and I have to work hard. And it's taking a lot of practice and a lot of trips to the language lab of compassion. That's like the dorkiest thing I've ever said. I'm loving it. Like practicing this new language to get to the point where it's starting to come naturally to me. Right. But it's hard. It's not an easy thing to do.
I agree. And I really like that analogy of a native language versus a language that you're learning, because you may understand it intellectually, but then to get it to come out of your mouth and off your tongue is like a whole different scenario. And especially if you're not immersed in it, in you know, the culture of where people speak that language. And when we're certainly not immersed in that culture here. And now,
no, not at all. And If you were to sort of like nail me down and make me say or make me choose the one practice or idea or skill or strategy that has been the most powerful in parenting, it's got to be self-compassion. And I feel so cheesy saying that. You know, it feels really cheesy to me. I'm such a snarky person to get on here and be like, self-compassion is really my jam. It's weird, but it's true. It's like my daughter's favorite National Geographic books, the like gross but true facts. That's how I feel. It's weird, but it's true. That really it's become foundational for me.
I agree completely. I talk about mindfulness a lot, and in mindful parenting, we talk about mindfulness, we talk about self-compassion, but self-compassion underlies every single skill or thing we teach there because, and I'll let you explain this because I'm the one interviewing you today, but I want to hear about this because tell us why this is so foundational.
This is such a good question. Okay. Here's what I'm going to say. For me, mindfulness feels like this North Star. Like being in a state of mindful awareness feels like something I'm always reaching towards, but I'm never going to get there. Like not in any sort of permanent way. I'm just not. But it's when I don't know where to go, I can kind of turn to mindfulness. I can turn to the present moment. I can turn to this awareness. But inevitably, I don't want to use this word. The word that comes to mind is fail, but it's not really failing. I'm led astray. I get distracted. My thoughts careen all over the place. And self-compassion feels like the solid ground, mm-hmm. right? That I can always mm-hmm. come back to. So when I make a mistake. Oh, yeah. Was this a deep thought? Am I having a really deep thought?
There's clapping.
Oh, there's clapping? Yes. Oh, my God. Turn up the clapping. Yes, I got the clapping.
You can't hear it.
The audience better hear it. That's amazing.
I hope so. I hope it. But
self-compassion really does feel like the solid ground. Like when I have lost sight of that North Star, when I've totally made a mistake, when I've said things I regret, when I hit send on a message I shouldn't have sent, when I snap at my kids, when I start beating myself up for all these. I mean, how easy? Mm-hmm. Let's just take a minute, Hunter. Without even thinking about it, my brain instantly could roll off all these things I do wrong, right? Because I'm so good at thinking that way because I've been practicing it for so long. And self-compassion, like you can get so easily swept away in that sea of terrible thoughts, of really shamey, blamey thoughts. And self-compassion, just this awareness that I'm doing it, this reminder that it's just part of human nature. Doesn't mean there's anything inherently wrong with me. It's what we all do. Remembering that parenting is hard for everyone, no matter how good you look on Instagram, no matter how many parenting books you've written, parenting is hard for all of us.
Yes.
And knowing that I can make mistakes and still be a good parent, and I can screw up in pretty significant ways and still have a relationship with my kids and still be connected with them. That's the solid ground. I can't, you know, I don't know where else to go from there.
And the paradox, dear listener, for you, if you're like, oh, that's nice, but I don't want to make tons of mistakes with my kids and be compassionate with
good
myself.
Good luck with that,
if you're listening to this and saying that, is that the paradox of self-compassion is that as we practice to be kinder to ourselves, as we practice to give ourselves more understanding and grace when we inevitably do mess up, because we will, we soften a little. And the paradox is that parenting does become a little easier. When we are judging ourselves less, we're just softening. We're not holding as tightly. We're able to give more compassion to our kids. We're able to have greater perspective. All of those things that we need to be able to relate in a more positive manner with our kids, they come from starting with ourselves and offering ourselves this soft landing, this grace when we do mess up. Would you agree with that, Carla?
I think you should give yourself a clap track. The clap trap. I was trying to be all serious there and I screwed it up. Clap trap. Yes, 100%. Hunter, look, here's how I think about it. I 100% agree with every single thing you just said. And when, okay, let's talk about, so I've had a bad moment. Maybe I've had a sort of prickly, brutal interaction with my teenager and we've snapped at each other and it's like not the way I want to be with her. So instead of either like berating myself for being such a crappy parent or like running to Amazon and searching for books on how to parent teenagers or calling up my friend and talking relentlessly about how much I'm screwing up parenting, I just take a moment. Okay. And here's what I do. And it's become for a long time, it felt like a struggle. It was hard to do it. It felt weird. I felt like I was Stuart Smiley from Saturday Night Live, sitting myself in front of that stupid mirror being like, I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like me, but that's not what this is. So I take a moment, I take a few deep breaths, and I just remind myself, parenting is hard. And just because it's hard doesn't mean I'm doing it wrong, right? This is part of the deal.
Wait, say that again. Say that exactly what you just said again.
Okay. And then I want a clap track. Okay. Parenting is hard. And just because it's hard doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. It's like a marathon. We say parenting is like a marathon, right? Well, if somebody ran a marathon and got to the end of it and was like, oh, that was really hard, you wouldn't be like, oh, you totally screwed it up because marathon should be super easy. You'd be like, yeah, it's a freaking marathon, dude. Of course it's hard, right? Parenting, it is hard. It is hard. It is always hard. It's hard. Deep thoughts.
So No. And I did try to put cheering behind you. So
yeah, I'm want just the cheering.
But so, Carla's saying that I want to reiterate what you said because I hope they could hear it behind the cheering that I messed up and then tried to stop, which is that it is a marathon. It is. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. And that no one's going to, you know, laugh at you and say that, oh, you know, marathons are easy. It's incredibly hard. It's hard.
Yeah, but here's the thing is that popular culture and social media would have us believe that if you are parenting well, it should be easy. Right? I mean, I am obsessed with this reality show because I'm obsessed with reality shows about this family that has like 16 kids. And in every episode, they never yell at their children. The dad's like happily making dinner and all the kids are involved and they're all like happy around the counter. And I'm like, dear God, man, you look so freaking happy, but you have to cook for 16 people every stinking night. And the kids are like happily involved and nobody's screaming and nobody's throwing tantrums and nobody's throwing flour and the mom isn't in the corner like sobbing and questioning all her life choices. Like she never does that. And so the message you get from this is that if you are a good parent, it's going to be easy. And that is total baloney. It's not true. But and the other message we get is that if it's not easy, it's because we parents haven't worked hard enough to find the right strategy or the right expert or the right solution. And that drives me. Do you hear my voice, Hunter? I'm getting very agitated here because that drives me nuts. It's just not true. Parenting is always hard. It's hard in different ways for different people and at different times. Like I have friends who love having toddlers and I thought having toddlers was a total nightmare. And I love having teenagers and I have friends who think teenagers are the worst, right? And it's hard in different ways for all of us, but parenting is hard, okay? And so it used to be that in those really painful, hard moments for me, I was like, so this moment was horrible and it's clearly because I suck. And now the story I tell myself, and some days I believe it more than others, but I always remind myself is that this moment was hard because parenting is hard. And life, man, Hunter, look, I am grateful every day that I have a roof over my head, as you pointed out, that we have enough food to eat, that you know, we have access to health insurance and healthcare and all the things. And I am aware that there are millions of people around this globe who don't have that. So I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that. But I don't care what resources you have. Life is hard right now, right? There's this pandemic. There's transitioning out of the pandemic. There's politics and climate change and all the things. And it is so stinking hard. And so what I try to remind myself, again, snippy moment with my teenage daughter, I take my deep breaths. I remind myself that I'm not alone in how hard this is. It's hard for everyone. Just because it's hard doesn't mean I'm doing it wrong. And then I try to get curious with myself. What do I need? Do I need to pee? Have I not peed in like 4 hours? Because really, I've had two children and I'm a middle-aged woman, so I need to pee every 45 minutes, let's be honest. But like, what's going on there? Am I hungry? Am I worried about work deadlines? Am I stressed about a bill I thought I paid but I didn't? Is it an, like, is my toenail hurting? My toenails hurt sometimes. That's annoying. Are there family conflicts that I'm worried about? Is there something going on with my daughter's school that's unresolved? Like, what's the bigger picture? What do I need? What's going on with my kids? What do they need? And then I try to listen and take myself seriously. So if the answer I get is, I need a freaking break, well, is there some way I can give myself a break for a few minutes? Can I say to my kids, yeah, you can have an hour of screen time I wasn't planning on giving you, but I'm so freaking depleted, I have nothing to offer. Or can I say to my parenting partner, because I'm fortunate, I have a parenting partner, can I say to him, can you tag in here? Because I can't do this right now. You know, I need to go sit and stare at the wall for a while. I need to go wander the aisles of Staples, which is absolutely my happy place. And if they would like to start paying me for saying this, I would be really happy, Staples, for you to pay me for this. There is something about office supplies, Hunter. They're just so relaxing. If I find the perfect notebook, I swear to you, Hunter, when I find the perfect notebook, my life will be amazing. That is the message of this podcast. Anyways, the point is,
I try
to get curious about what I need, and I try to take myself seriously. And if I'm really suffering and I can't come up with any of this, then I call my native compassion speakers. I call my sister. I call my friends. I call the people in my life who are going to speak to me in that language of compassion when I can't summon it myself, which happens sometimes. It happens to all of us.
Yeah.
And then when I do all that, I am calmer. I can see the situation more clearly because I'm not caught in this swirl of like self-contempt. I can have more confidence as a parent. You know, when you're not constantly beating yourself up, you feel more confident. And I am more competent. These are my two words that sound the same, confident and competent. And when you can see things clearly and you can parent from a place of calm confidence, you're going to be a more effective parent. It's just what it is. And even if you don't have the right answer, that's okay. There's no right answer. I don't have it. I mean, I don't know who has it, but it's going to be more effective, empathic parenting.
Yay. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I love the way you talked. You gave this beautiful example of how this works, right? Of how this practice, which can feel uncomfortable and it can feel like a foreign language and it can feel strange and weird at first, how this practice, as we start to speak this language, can help us to recover, get back on our feet, have that ground beneath us to then begin anew, to begin again, right? Because we're always just, you know, it's like we're gonna fall down, and we have to have processes and practices to help us get back on our feet and begin again and open our eyes and see clearly and let that storm pass, whatever that is. You know, it's I really like how you explained that. You did it very beautifully, Carla.
Thank you. And you know, the other thing that I think about, Hunter, is that I am the mother of two daughters, as I know you are as well. And I can't speak about the male experience because I'm not a man and I don't have sons. And but I know that women, we really tend to beat ourselves up and blame ourselves. And I'm sure men do too. This is a human experience. But the other day I screwed something up. I don't know what it was. It doesn't matter. And one of my girls looked at me and she said, Mom, it's okay. We all make mistakes. And I was having one of those emotionally unhinged days, Hunter, that I have from time to time. I almost burst into tears because I was so grateful to hear those words just flow out of her mouth. We all make mistakes. And I was like, amen, child. And how I wish I had grown up speaking that language. So I know that my daughters are growing up in a world of judgment and comparison and all the enemies of joy. But I'm hoping that with this practice that I'm doing imperfectly, but I'm not giving up, that, you know, my self-compassion practice, and that when my daughters hear me talk myself through a difficult moment with compassion, and when I try so hard to talk them through difficult moments with compassion, I think they're starting to learn this language a little bit. And that feels like a real gift, that maybe you and I and everybody else practicing mindful parenting and practicing compassion can start to raise some native speakers, which I think would be amazing.
I'm not going to overuse the applause and do it again, but that's what I would do right here, right now. Cause I think that is exactly that, like that idea that we can raise these native speakers. So I just want to go over what Carla said, just to to recap for the listener, that this practice was to recognize how you're feeling, right? To be aware of, like, oh, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm feeling I just did something that I didn't like. I'm hearing myself maybe think, you know, recriminating thoughts. And so that's when you take that moment. You just, and it, sometimes it doesn't take a lot of time. And as you practice, it takes less time. It really doesn't take that long. But you take a moment. I mean, and for me, I put that hand to my heart because that, for me, the touch really matters a lot. But just that acknowledgement of, like, that basically that's mindful awareness. Oh, like, this is happening right now. I'm feeling like a shitty parent because of X, Y, or Z, right? And then the, also she, there was that acknowledgement of, this is hard. This is a moment of suffering, right? Acknowledging that I'm feeling this difficult feeling and this is hard. She also acknowledged that, like, that, you know, it's hard for all of us. Like, being a human being is hard. Parenting is incredibly hard. This is really hard. And then that coming to that place of kindness, like, you know, how can I offer myself some kind words, or, and if I can I reach out to somebody else who can? Is that a good summary for you, Carla?
Yes, I love that. And what I want to point out to our listeners, and one of the reasons I love being friends with Hunter and I love learning from Hunter and coming on her podcast, is she and I have such dramatically different ways of practicing this. Dramatically? I don't know if it's dramatic, but we have different ways of practicing this, right? And I won't even lie, Hunter, the first time I was in a mindfulness-based stress reduction course and we were learning about loving kindness, I like almost threw up in my mouth because I was like, this is so freaking cheesy. I can't handle it. Do not talk to me about happy wishes, people. I need a plan. I need a life plan. I need a plan. And happy wishes are not my plan. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. What am I saying? I don't know. But really, I've come to understand and obviously sing the praises of self-compassion. But what I will tell you is that I love that Hunter pointed out that she actually does put her hand on her heart, which is a practice that many people do and many people teach. And to be honest, it's so not resonant with me. It doesn't, like, it's not meaningful. I feel cheesy. It totally doesn't work. And what I encourage your listeners to do is find your authentic way of speaking this language, right? It's going to look a little different for everyone, but the fundamental ideas behind it about connecting with what Kristen Neff calls common humanity, which is this reminder that you're not alone. No matter what your suffering is, I promise you, you're not alone. This real sense of curiosity about what's going on, about what you need, and then treating yourself with kindness. Those are sort of the fundamental aspects, and this mindful awareness. These are the fundamental aspects of compassion, and practice them in the way that is authentic to you, right? So use Hunter's words, use my words, use Bluey's words. Bluey's parent. Oh my God, do you know about Bluey, Hunter?
No. I mean, I think I've heard of Bluey.
The most, oh, it is this Australian animated show for preschoolers. And each episode is like 6 minutes long. And if you just want to feel better about humanity, go on YouTube, Google Bluey, sit and watch it. I made my teenage girls watch it. At first they were kind of horrified. And then they were like, this is pretty awesome. And I was like, yeah, it is. Take the words, you know, if you want to take the words from Mr. Rogers, like, I don't care where you find your native speaker of compassion, but as long as you have these fundamental aspects of connection, curiosity, kindness, you can't do wrong, but you need to speak it in a way that you can, that feels authentic to you.
And if it doesn't feel authentic right away, that's normal too, right? Like, it's normal for this to feel, that this is to feel weird. And especially maybe if you're like a snarky person who's allergic to loving kindness, right?
Who would that be? Yeah, for sure. So there's this loving kindness meditation, right? And the first, which I think is, it is literally going to the language lab to learn a new language, right? Because the first time I tried to practice self-compassion, I had come home from my mindfulness-based stress reduction course, and I was like, this is stupid, but I don't know what to do, so I'm going to do it. And I was like, oh, I just had a terrible moment. I was supposed to be nice to myself. And then I literally had no words, Hunter. I couldn't, like, I'm a nice person. I've been nice to other people a lot. And when it was time, how sad is this, right? How sad is this? Now we're going to be all wah, wah, wah. when it was time to be nice to myself, she's looking. I can see what I'm looking totally at. Looking she's looking for like the sad voice.
I only have a drum roll left, so I'm sorry.
I don't think we should do a drum roll. No. So this is like sad panda time that I literally couldn't find words to console myself in a painful moment. And so I was like, oh, fine, I'll do the stupid loving kindness because I am, in case any of this has escaped your listeners, I am a petulant child at heart. So I found these other words and I was like, oh, may I, whatever, what? And so, but then eventually I found them and I was walking around sort of saying to myself, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be safe, may I live with ease. Those are my words. Everybody's words are a little different. You can, Hunter's got all sorts of words for you. Go to Hunter's words. She's got all the words. She'll tell you where to get them. But there's lots of different ways to practice loving kindness. But literally, that's what you're doing. You're practicing. It's like going to the golfing course and hitting the ball over and over again until you can do it without it feeling so hard. And so I was like walking up and down the street being like, happy, healthy, safe, live with ease. May I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be safe, live with ease. And I was like, what is the point of this? But then in the hard moment, all of a sudden I was like, I just need a little ease right now. Mm-hmm. And that word came to me and it was like a start. So I was practicing when it was easy because you can't practice things in the middle of chaos. It doesn't work. And then in the chaotic moment, I was like, I just want to live with ease. And what would help me do that right now? So that was my entry. And if you walk around saying to yourself, parenting is hard for everyone and it's okay that it's hard, and you just repeat that to yourself a million times, that's fine too. So you're right, Hunter. It's not going to feel authentic at first. And if it does for you, that's great. But if it doesn't, that's normal. So try out a bunch of stuff, right? Try putting your hand over your heart. Try giving yourself a hug. Try having maybe a beaded bracelet or a necklace that somehow reminds you, like a physical touchstone that reminds you to have some kindness and forgiveness and acceptance. There's a bunch of different ideas out there. And so I have a ton in my book, Hunter's Got Ideas. But there's a lot of different ways to sort of sneak into this. And then you just need to keep doing it. And eventually it will feel more authentic and normal. And you'll be able to speak this language fluently.
All right. Last time. Yay!
Clap track for Hunter! Clap track for Carla! Yay.
Carla.
She's giving herself a round of applause, people.
I'm maybe so for excited. Me. I love your book, You Are Not a Shitty Parent. I blurbed it and got to check it out before everyone else in the world. I was very
best
lucky.
And
I encourage you to go get it, dear listener. And it can be found everywhere books are sold.
It's available
out,
for pre-order until September 27th, and then it hits shelves on September 27th.
Carla, thank you so much for coming on the Mindful Mama podcast again. Returning guest extraordinaire. And thank you for doing this work and being the great, hilarious writer that you are, and relatable in all the different ways, which I really love. Where can people reach out to you and talk to you more about your books?
So people can find out more about me on my website, which is carlanomberg.com. And Hunter, I just want to take this moment to thank you for all the wise, kind, loving, skillful advice and support you offer to parents. We need to like clone you. I want a lot more of you out there talking to parents. So that's our next activity. Hunter cloning.
As my
in
daughter
a not
would
creepy
say.
Way.
Oh.
Wait, what did your daughter say?
She says, she used to say when she's little, you have received an eye roll, mommy.
Wait, did you just eye roll me, Hunter? Oh my gosh. My daughter used to stand in front of the mirror and practice rolling her eyes,
oh,
which is
did.
Really hard to do because you can't see yourself rolling your eyes when you're rolling
your
eyes.
Yeah, because you're looking away. Trying. You know, yeah. That's hilarious.
Dear listeners.
Thank you, Carla.
Hunter just eye rolled me. Let's just acknowledge that. I'm still treating her with kindness, though.
Oh, I love you, Carla. Thank you so much for coming on, and I can't wait to talk to you again about your next 10 books. Come back on the Mindful Mama podcast whenever you want. Just let me know.
I will come on anytime, anytime. You and your listeners are amazing.
I always love talking to Carla. She is a good friend, and I love what love her message and I love what she has to say. And I hope it has helped you today, my friend. I hope it has helped you have some more compassion and grace for yourself, because this is so, so, so vital, as we talked about. Listen, if you love what you're hearing here today and you want to take it deeper, you can. The people I help the most are in the Mindful Parenting membership, and you can learn more about it and get on the wait list at mindfulparentingcourse.com. And it's an incredible, incredible resource. Over 500 families, 36 hours of live coaching every year, which honestly, it's the coaching. It's the coaching makes all the difference. Just being able to talk to a real person makes all the difference in the world, from you going from, you know, frustrated and banging your head against the wall and like really getting it and understanding and growing and learning. So if you want to learn more, you want to go deeper, get on the wait list. It's at mindfulparentingcourse.com/teach. And you'll see me there. I'll see you there if you go there. And listen, I'm hoping that you have a wonderful week, my friend. I hope you have compassion and ease and joy and lots of hugs and someone else cooking you dinner a number of nights this week. That's what I'm hoping for you. And I can't wait to connect with you again next week. Thank you. Thank you so much for spending your time with me and with Carla. And I hope I get to see your takeaways. And I hope you have all of those wonderful things. The someone else cooking you dinner, maybe even a foot rub, crazy time by yourself to read a novel. What? Yes, I wish that for you. Thank you so much for listening, my friend, and I will talk to you again next week. Namaste.
Say definitely do it. It's really helpful. It will change your relationship with your kids for the better. It will help you communicate better. And just, I'd say communicate better as a person, as a wife, as a spouse. It's been really a positive influence in our lives. So definitely do it.
I'd say definitely do it. It's so worth it. The money really is inconsequential when you get so much benefit from being a better parent to your children and feeling like you're connecting more with them and not feeling like you're yelling all the time or you're like, why isn't things working? I would say definitely do it. It's so, so worth it. It'll change you.
No matter what age someone's child is, it's a great opportunity for personal growth and it's a great investment in someone's family. I'm very thankful I had this.
You can continue in your old habits that aren't working, or you can learn some new tools and gain some perspective to shift everything in your parenting.
Are you frustrated by parenting? Do you listen to the experts and try all the tips and strategies, but you're just not seeing the results that you want? Or are you lost as to where to start? Does it all seem so overwhelming with too much to learn? Are you yearning for a community of people who get it, who also don't want to threaten and punish to create cooperation? Hi, I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and if you answered yes to any of these questions, I want you to seriously consider the Mindful Parenting membership. You'll be joining hundreds of members who have discovered the path of mindful parenting and now have confidence and clarity in their parenting. This isn't just another parenting class. This is an opportunity to really discover your unique, lasting relationship, not only with your children, but with yourself. It will translate into lasting, connected relationships, not only with your children, but your partner too. Let me change your life. Go to mindfulparentingcourse.com to add your name to the waitlist, so you will be the first to be notified when I open the membership for enrollment. I look forward to seeing you on the inside. mindfulparentingcourse.com.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us